Ooh, to the point, I'm Ed Mullins, and tonight's guest is Clark Pena. Clark has been a longtime member of New York City, works very closely with a large amount of the clergy throughout New York, particularly Hispanic clergy, but he's got his ear to the ground. And Clark, I want to first welcome you, and I would like to open up with the crime that's going on in New York City. You obviously are in the trenches. You talk to hundreds of people probably every day. I know I communicate with you on a different events that are occurring throughout the city. What is the pulse of the people right now in New York City with crime?
Well, first of all, Ed, thank you so much for having me on the program. It's an honor to be here next to someone that tells it like it is. Not everyone agrees with you all the time, but guess what? You put the word out. And either they like you or they could just leave it alone, but they're going to listen to what you say. Now, talking about what's going on in the city, it's really unfortunate the lack of leadership that the law enforcement officers are getting in New York City. And at the same time, as you well know, we speak to a lot of elected officials that are on board, but they're afraid to say that they're on board. It's not popular for our elected officials right now to say, I support the police, and that's really unfortunate, but that's the state of affairs today in New York City.
Why do you feel that elected officials are afraid to say they support the police? I mean, I have my view, but people will say I'm biased based on what I see, what I experience. I just can't believe that the elected officials, both on the city level and the state level, maintain the silence that they do, knowing that people are being shot, murdered in the streets, raped. You know, we're seeing a rash of slashings on the subways, and yet they say nothing. I mean, don't they feel obligated to their constituents? Why the silence, Clark?
First of all, let me begin by saying this. Ed, you said that you're biased. Your job is to protect your members, and you do that well. I speak to a lot of sergeants while I'm in the field, and they all are very happy with your leadership and the word that you put out and the way you protect them. That's your job. That's what you get paid to do. As far as the elected officials, I really do believe that this Black Lives Matter movement really put a lot of fear in the hearts of the elected officials. They really believe that the movement has a strong following. But what you don't see is you don't see the seniors and you don't see the law-abiding folks that are going to work every day speak against the police. But it's not popular. It's not a popular position to take. So that's what's going on right now with our elected officials, in my opinion. I believe that they think that everyone's going to follow the Black Lives Matter movement and their train of thought, and that's going to affect the possibility of them being removed from their position, voting out of their position. And they're totally wrong.
You know, just today, several of the police unions took to a radio campaign on a different issues affect the New York City, but providing solutions. And I particularly ran ads calling out elected officials by name. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that their constituents need to know that these are the people responsible for the crime in their neighborhoods. You know, we're looking at a photo of the governor. You know, he signed off on bail reform. And how can he not know that bail reform is just a revolving door for criminals being arrested, being brought back out to the street? And, you know, the new campaign for the police should be don't blame us. That should be the new campaign, because everyone blames us, but the media is, you know, the voice for the elected officials. And, you know, the story of capturing the cop doing something becomes a good story. Let's talk about these elected officials. You know, we just looked at the governor, who has been going through some negative media in the past month and a half, really.
Extremely, a lot of it.
Yeah, and surviving. It's incredible that he's surviving on allegations, a lot of, you know, death in nursing homes, a revolving door for parole, you know, murderers rolling right in and out of the system, and bail reform, and no one's holding him accountable. The city of New York, we have Bill de Blasio. No one holds him accountable. I mean, the guy just continues to wake up every day and probably questions what year he's in. And there's no accountability to this. How do we get to the people in the communities, the people in the churches, the older people, the people that we are supposed to be representing? Because the truth of the matter is the cops are trying to do that. And right. We're not getting any help.
Well, Ed, you're already doing the work. Your Labor to the Pulpit series, where you have visited churches in the Bronx, in Brooklyn. I know that you're going to be visiting an upstanding church at the end of this month in Queens. So you're doing the work. You're building that bridge. And you're making it able for someone to meet you from the other side. And that's very important. You're inclusive. You're creating the conversation, since the city is not willing to have you as part of that conversation. So you're doing the work. I really hope, with all due respect to the other labor leaders, that they follow your lead, because that is the way that we're going to have the elected officials be held accountable, and at the same time, build that bridge to have a better communication system with the city and the citizens of New York.
How do we get, though, as we go to these churches and we talk to the people, you know, there's children. I was just watching a video yesterday in a small town of a police officer that actually spent time playing with children in, it looked to me to be some type of public housing area, but he was playing games with them and on his own. He wasn't sent there as this community policing thing. The guy genuinely cared about what he was doing. And a lot of cops do this. You know, I see this on a regular basis, but as a message from our department, we kind of do the happy dance to, you know, try to tell people. Do you think, or do you know, that that has any impact to the people in the community when they see, you know, these videos that are being put out, or cops out there dancing in street fairs? Is there an impact to that, or is there something different that we should be looking at?
I think you said it perfectly when there was a police officer that was seen dancing on the street, and you said, you know, he's still a police officer and he's still using that uniform. He represents that uniform. So I think that everything has to be done according to the law, according to your protocol, your SOPs. And at the same time, I think labor leaders and labor organizations such as yours doing the outreach, you know, the members stand behind you. That's why you're the president of this organization, the SBA. And they know that you're doing the work and they continue to support you. What is being done without you even knowing this, Ed, is that when your union gave out up to 800 boots, very simple. Ed Geary, one of your board members, helped load these boots up to these vehicles. And if you go to Queens County right now, thanks to you, your union, and your board, there's no one is barefooted in Queens right now. Everyone has a pair of boots. And that sends a message in two ways. This is for you. This is coming from the SBA. And at the same time, the logo of the SBA is on the side of the boots, and people are very proud of wearing them. And you're sending a message that, look, we're willing to help. We're willing to share this with you. And even though it may be small to us, to some, it's huge to others. So, you know, let me take this opportunity to thank you.
Actually, it's the members. You know, I speak to a lot of our members, and you know, every time I have a conversation, one of them, I ask for ideas, but in the same breath, they ask me, what could we do? We need to get into the communities. They don't feel that this community policing program is sincere across the city. Some believe it, and they believe that they're doing a good job of it. And after speaking with them, I believe they're doing a good job of it, but it's sporadic. And, you know, when you talk to individual sergeants or cops, you know, I speak to all different ranks, even chiefs who don't like to go on record. They say the same thing. We need to get into the communities on a sincere level. And they want this to happen. They want somebody in there talking on their behalf, because we don't have that voice. And the real truth is that I see this in the churches. I see it with the people we talk to, because these are actually the residents of New York City. You know, I guess it's like one bridge at a time, right?
You know, absolutely. And the word is out. The word is out. They're ready to give you a white collar.
A white collar, huh?
You're doing great work. You're doing great work, and a lot of people really do appreciate that.
Well, we're not going to stop. We have, you know, I know we've spoken about a few programs. We've even talked about doing some things with city council members to, you know, try to get them on board. The biggest thing I'd like to get them on board is to really look at these laws. And they have to be able to put their egos aside to you know, look, when you make a mistake, it's like being a child in grammar school, right? You took a test, you made a mistake, you got your grade, you failed, right? But you had to find a way to come back to do better. So these laws that they are implementing and have a negative impact on society, they know that they don't work. Right. You know, how do we get them to get past the fear factor of Black Lives Matter? And Black Lives Matter, when you talk about a fear factor, it's almost like you're being bullied into something. And what's the impact? So let's look at the impact. Now, I raised that question. The impact, just today, we had, what, 5 slashings on the subways?
You had 2 police officers injured.
Okay. The homicide rate is escalating. The shootings are escalating.
Rapes.
And from what I see, and, you know, when I get the peek at some of these reports or I call around to the commands, they're not people who look like me. They're people, the victims are the people that, if you say Black Lives Matter, well, these are young Black males that are being shot or shooting and in many cases dying. So where's the protest for this? Why are they not reaching out, Black Lives Matter, and demanding City Hall do something about the homicide rate?
We just had a 17-year-old in the shooting on Webster Avenue in the Bronx.
Right, I saw that.
A 17-year-old did die. Everyone said that, you know, no one was likely, but at the hospital, a 17-year-old Hispanic male did die at the hospital. So that's one death. That's someone's child, parents, grandparents, and people are going to be suffering. I really do believe that when there's so many victims, you have to have those that are survivors of these victims, and have them step out and have them speak without fear. If you have fear, it's not going to work.
That's the problem. We have fear. No one wants to come forward. And where's the leaders? Like, did Al Sharpton move out of the city of New York? Where is he?
He hasn't been around.
Where is he? I mean, all of a sudden we have silence. The you know, crime is skyrocketing. There's no cops to beat up on anymore. Where is he? We have, you know, people who look like him that are being shot and killed in the streets. And his friend, de Blasio, is in charge, and we hear crickets. This is a time where if you want to have that voice, is to have that voice. And why am I the one talking about this? Why is it that I'm speaking on behalf of, you know, police officers who are the ones protecting people's lives and trying to save these lives? I mean, we just looked over the weekend, last week, in the shooting in Times Square. We witnessed a female police officer carrying a 4-year-old child. Right. We see this happening in Brownsville. We see this happening in the Bronx. They're calling 911. I mean, I get some tragic looking videos that are sent to me from all over the place. But unfortunately, I can't even share them because Internal Affairs is monitoring everything we do. So they've kind of stymied my ability to put out information. But these are what the public needs to see. Right. And, you know, just for the record, if, you know, Commissioner Resnick's listening, they're not your tapes. But because you keep monitoring and censoring what we do, I cannot share this with the public. So, you know, the media is not sharing this with the public, but I get it from people's cell phones. They send it to me. I don't even know some of these people, yeah. But you're seeing police officers really trying to save people's lives. Right. And no one talks about it. I just don't understand it.
Something else I see from monitoring your accounts, Ed, is that people send tons and tons of video because they know that you're speaking up and speaking out. So they share it. You know, can you please share this? And these people that don't have a voice.
No. There's some woman on the Upper West Side of Manhattan who I believe is organized with somewhere like 10,000 people on the West Side. And she's always sending me photos of homeless, you know, people mentally ill roaming the street and you know, really begging for help. You know, I a while back had posted a photo of it was homeless outside the 20th Precinct area. And that created a whole wave, brought back into internal affairs, you know, a short time after that. It's almost like the city's trying to hide this.
Right.
And, you know, the public knows it's there. No one wants to ride the subways. I mean, look, the slashings in the subways. If you think about it, we had a serial killer in the subway back a couple of months ago. We now had a series of slashings this past weekend. What are the people in the different communities that you're involved in talking about it? I mean, they rely on these subways to get to work, you know?
Yeah. A lot of them do. They can't afford Ubers or cab rides. But the fact of the matter is you should start saving because it's unfortunate. But if you go into the subway system, you are definitely taking your life into your own hands. There has to be some accountability. You know, if I, God forbid, get assaulted in the subway, I should be able to sue somebody.
Yeah.
And when you hurt someone in their pocket, change does come, you know. So there has to be someone to be held accountable. Who can you sue?
There should be a presumption of safety, you know, no different than when we fly on an airline. We expect the plane to land. We don't expect to be sitting as a passenger and getting mugged by the person, you know, in the row behind us. There should be a presumption of safety when riding the subways. What's interesting is that there's a new chief in a transit system, Chief O'Reilly, and she's phenomenal. She really is.
Yeah.
And unbeknownst to her, I've actually have spotted her, a chief, riding the subway, just patrolling. And, you know, I saw on the opposite sides of the platform, but, you know, she's out there and she is, you know, giving her best effort. But if she doesn't have the laws to back her up, if she's not getting the support from above, then how much more are you expecting her to do? She's out there herself. So how much more do you expect her to do? It's sad, but
it's you know, then you also have to place some responsibility to the district attorneys that are in place now.
We have them in New York.
Yeah, but I'm saying they're not doing
district much. Attorneys in New York, because we have not seen any prosecutions going on in New York City in quite some time. You know, it's pretty sad, but we hardly see anything happening as far as law and order goes. You know, Staten Island DA is doing his best, but I see this politics of what do I feel like prosecuting today?
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem that there's any real indication of prosecution.
Yeah. There was an arrest made not too long ago of the individual who was attacking the synagogues, defacing and vandalizing the synagogues, and the DEA, the good men and the detectives bureau made the arrest. By the time they made the arrest, took him down to central booking, he was released without bail. What message does that send?
Yeah.
What message does that send to
this is what they want in a city. You know, de Blasio just kind of denies everything. You know, I love when he says he supports the police. I don't know if he knows what the word police means when he says that. Because law and order in this city, I mean, he's now been the first mayor in over 20 years to have lost the city. Commissioner Shea is the first police commissioner in probably 20 years who's really lost the city as a police commissioner. So what do you really think can happen at this point? I mean, we're upside down. And residents, you know, are not happy. It seems that in the upcoming mayoral election, public safety is the big concern. You agree?
Right. I agree. They took an unscientific poll not too long ago where they said that COVID and crime are the two main concerns right now for the citizens of New York City.
It's interesting. As I spoke to someone who worked in the ME's office, you mentioned COVID, and I was asking about the COVID deaths. And it's funny because COVID actually cured cancer, suicides and heart attacks and car accidents. No one died of any of those things during COVID. Everyone died of COVID. So, like, what happened to the suicides, the cardiacs, the cancer patients, and people getting killed by cars? That just doesn't exist anymore. So now COVID is responsible for crime. It's incredible how we blame COVID for everything.
That's what de Blasio, every time he has his press conferences, and I hear the great Marsha Kramer, who always asks him the same question, you know, Mr. Mayor, what about the crime? And immediately he jumps into the COVID issue.
Yeah.
You know, now, you know, this is all passing by, and I would love to see his press conferences and what happens if he continues to blame it on COVID. You know, the city's getting back to normal as far as COVID, no more masks. So, you know, who's going to blame it on?
His press conferences are about French fries right now.
Yeah. And you can't blame COVID. You can't blame Ed Mullins.
No. That'll be his next thing. Is Ed Mullins doesn't like French fries. That'll be the next thing. You know, all we ask you to do is just do your job. Just do your job. If you did your job and you led and you stopped playing these games, I got to be honest. I'm quite embarrassed for the leadership of the NYPD. Because they know better.
Yeah.
They know better. It just doesn't make sense. You know, we're a couple of months away from a new mayor. I think the city welcomes it. I know I welcome it. Most of the members of the NYPD welcome it. And the complete change would be nice. So I'm going to put you on the spot. I mean, who do you see as the next mayor of the city of New York? What's the pulse of the community?
I can honestly say, will this upset you? I don't want to upset you in any way.
Clark, we're all about being factual and telling the truth. Whether we like it or not, we need to tell the truth.
Eric Adams.
It's ironic you say that, because that's who I see in today's paper has him in the lead. You know, Eric was a cop, and I got to believe he gets the crime issue. Now, why do you say Eric Adams?
I think, you know, there's a saying that you have to have walked where I've walked to know where I've been and how to fix things. And I think that Eric has walked the beat. I knew Eric before he was in politics. He created 100 Blacks in law enforcement at the same time that Anthony Miranda created 100 Latinos in law enforcement.
He's running for a council seat also.
He's running, as a matter of fact, he wants to meet with you. So now that you mentioned him, he wants to meet with you.
Meet with everyone. We just want to see where their heart is. If their heart's in the right spot.
Well, he's running for a council seat, and I really believe that Anthony has ran so many times that he has name recognition in Queens. So, you know, I wish him well. I am going to meet with him very soon. And I expect good things coming from him during this election period.
I want to go back to Eric Adams. You know, him being a cop, he was a cop in the 80s and right into the 90s when New York City was as bad, possibly worse. The only difference I would say is that the elected officials did support the police back then, and the news media was not hunting us. They would just tell a story. So there's a difference. But he did see what it was like in this city with the crime and, you know, the violence that was occurring. So when you say he walked in those shoes, he did. Why not Yang?
You know, I think Yang, and I met Yang only once, and it was really in passing. We didn't get into a lot of detail. But I think Yang is just a politician. He's running, and he speaks without too much facts. You know, he talks about crime without really knowing, you know, what people in New York City are going through. I just don't. And I go by my gut feeling as well. I've been around many, many, many politicians, and I know who means well. And I know politicians at the same time. But there's many of them that will agree to disagree and will go the extra mile if he does agree or she does agree. I've spoken to Eric in the past many, many, many times. And what you see is what you get with Eric Adams. He's going to tell you, you know, one day we were in a conversation and he says, hey, cool, like, you know, we're talking about crime. And all of a sudden he's looking at me. He says, I got this book about becoming a vegan. And I, you know, he gave me the book. He took it out of his bag, gave me, he said, read it. And he's that type of guy where if something pops into his mind in that moment, he's going to let you know and then move on. And I respect that. Look, I didn't read the book.
I can tell you this, of what I know of Eric Adams. He made a lot of changes in the NYPD back in the 80s. And, you know, at the time, he was almost the Antichrist making the changes because he was going against the grain. And it all had to do with race, which is where we are in today's society. He was trying to balance the playing field. And, you know, I could say, you know, years later, having come in the 80s and still be here, he made a difference in the department by making those changes. He balanced the department, you know, with diversity. It started with him. I believe Ray Kelly deserves the credit for it. He sent people recruiting from different countries, but it did start with Eric Adams. So, you know, if he is the next mayor, maybe there's a possibility of healing the relationships between the communities and the police. He might have that ability. None of them have reached out to us for any conversation. So I guess everyone's into the anti-police mode. But, you know, the pendulum will swing back somewhere along the line, and we'll see who the next mayor is. But the city hasn't had a mayor in 8 years. So I think right now, welcome mayor, you know.
Do you think that the doors under an Eric Adams administration will be for the unions? You think he'll have an open door policy with them and look forward
to be honest with you, Clark, I think what anyone should ask for is not that it's for the unions, but for the people. If the right elected official, actually if any elected official, did their job with the focus of taking care of the people, then everything flows, right? Regardless of what your profession, it all flows, because if people are in small business and business is good, there's tax revenue is applied toward, you know, public safety, police officers get paid, you know, the public wants safer streets, things like that. It all flows hand in hand. Firemen, we need sanitation, we need the schools, you know, we need to do better in the schools. I'd like to see a mayor that does better for education in the schools. But I think if you're for the people, then it's a win for everybody, because any individual ask, and I always laugh when I hear this, no one particular elected politician takes, you know, I'm for this union or I'm for that union or for this issue. And if they are, they're probably not the people to vote for, you know, right. What are they going to do for the city? And then we win together. And I think that's the way you got to look at it. And I haven't heard any one of them talk about that yet. So,
right.
You know, the city of New York is in the one councilman, you know, Fernando Cabrera, he's for the people.
He really is.
You know, I've spoken with him, and, you know, he wants to do what's right for the people. And it looks like he's going to be the Bronx Borough President soon. And hopefully you'll see something change in the Bronx, because I often see the Bronx as the forgotten borough. I realized that I was up at a trial for a couple of weeks in the winter months, and there was some snow on the ground. And what was different in the Bronx as compared to the rest of the city was the garbage in the streets were piled up. And it wasn't being picked up as regularly as it was in Manhattan or in some areas of Brooklyn that I saw. And I question, is the Bronx the forgotten borough? Because it seems that way. You know, it's the only part of New York City attached to the mainland, but I think Cabrera's got his heart in the right spot. And, you know, I think that he could make an impact there going forward.
I agree. I agree with you 110%. I do believe that Councilmember Fernando Cabrera will be Bronx Borough President, Fernando Cabrera, June 22nd. I work very closely with him. We become very close. He has a lot of respect for you, Ed, as well. He loves the community. He's a pastor, so he loves his churches.
Yeah.
And he's going to bring a lot to the table. He's going to bring a lot to the Bronx. Calls me all the time to ask me about the shootings. Clark, how is this going? How is that going? Please let the news media know that I'm willing to talk on the shootings.
Really asking questions about the violence, the shootings, what could be done. So, you know, and that's pretty impressive, because I don't get those calls from a lot of elected officials. I just don't see it happen. What do you see happening in Queens with the borough president?
Well, you know, you have Donovan Richards, who's now the Queensborough president, and he was the head of public safety.
And
that didn't work out very well. He took the position. He was appointed the position after Vanessa Gibson left the position, where she was removed from the position. He also pushed the diaphragm bill. And a lot of elected officials who voted in favor of the diaphragm bill are now saying, you know, they were misguided by Donovan Richards, the Queensborough president.
Lay the blame on somebody else. Lay the blame on a guy that's not here anymore.
Yes.
You voted for it. Don't you know what you voted for? Actually, you know, Donovan Richards, I think we lost your clock.
I'm sorry. I lost.
There you go. That's a power failure? There you go. You're back. He's frozen.
I'm back. I'm sorry. All right. That was a call coming in. I think it was Fernando.
It's more like they're censoring you right now. I bet you it's Resnick. You got the wrong computer.
He's back to me up. He's back. I'm back.
Yeah, that man in the shadows I keep talking about.
Am I back?
I see you. How long have you been here? Anyway, we were talking about Donovan Richards. He initiated the diaphragm bill, you know, the whole thing of public safety. He's made no statements about the impact of that bill to the violence that's occurring in the city, and even as borough president, because his borough is affected also. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, Donovan Richards, in my opinion, made a huge mistake by pushing that forward, and he knows he made a huge mistake by pushing that bill forward and having people, according to them, erroneously misled for them to sign on to that bill. So now, you know, you hide. You make a mistake, you're not willing to take onus over it, guess what? You hide. And that's what he's doing right now. He's hiding. And it's not even into the warmer months of the summer. Can you imagine what's coming? If we're seeing what we're seeing now.
Oh, I know what's coming. I see what's coming. The impact of his diaphragm bill on policing has been detrimental. It's almost as though the city council contributed co-conspirators to shooters and homicides, because they have tied the hands of police officers. You know, most of them, if not all of them, have never put their hands on anyone to grab an arrest or make an arrest. And the most peaceful person, you and I could be having this conversation the way it's going, until I tell you, put your hands behind your back, you're under arrest. And you could easily just lose it. And you could be a big guy, a little guy, a woman. You will at times develop strength that we are just not able to get you under control. And by all means necessary, we don't go away. We will bring you into custody, whether it's with one police officer or 10. But in the course of this, this diaphragm bill prohibits a police officer from getting on top of an individual's back while trying to make that arrest. We're not talking about you're in cuffs and now we're holding you down. We're talking about wrestling with you to try to get you into play here. And they took away a tool from a police officer. There you go. They took away a tool, you know, from a police officer to apprehend an individual. But worse yet, they're making it a crime if you do that. So right. For me, trying to arrest someone, and I don't do it to your standards, although my life could be the life on the line, you will want to indict me. So what's the answer then?
Someone has to be held responsible for protecting the police officer. In my opinion, look, when I was a peace officer working out of city hospitals, if we were to restrain someone, sometimes we had to use mechanical restraints. And if this individual does not want to be handcuffed, guess what? He's going to fight you to the end. And we were unarmed at the city hospital. So what we worked with was manpower. As many people as we can get. Just swarm them and take them down as the best we can without hurting ourselves or hurting the individual. But we all know that police officers that are trying to make an arrest and they have to deal with the person that does not want to be arrested, you have to understand that the police officer has to do his job. He just cannot just say, okay, you don't want to be arrested, I walk away. You can't do that. There has to be some type of respect for the job of the police officer. And I think that one of the solutions as well is to let the individuals know, you cannot resist arrest.
You raise an issue that leads me to a thought that we just can't walk away. So a victim approaches a police officer and says, that man just robbed me. And the officer grabs the individual. And he doesn't want to be arrested. So now we're engaged in, some type of physical altercation. If we took the other approach that I may get indicted by doing this, the real victim, the robbery victim, so to speak, is now a victim of a system created by Donovan Richards and supported by other city council members. What's sad is that they made this mistake. People are actually dying on the streets of New York City, and they won't fix it. They won't fix it knowing that people are dying and people are being victimized, and they just won't stand up to say, I made a mistake. This law is not, working, and we need right. to fix it. And the person that does, the one person that does, will gain the support of everyone else. But I'm amazed at the amount of cowards that are sitting there doing this. It's yeah. really... It's incredible.
Did you see Eric Adams at the last debate? He came out and kudos to him. He says we need to return street crime to our city streets.
He actually called for more anti-crime.
Yeah, he called for more anti-crime. He says,
well, I agree with him.
Yeah, it works.
Him. Yeah. What we did when we did away with anti-crime is we sent the message to the public that there's no plainclothes cops out there. And I personally believe that Commissioner Shea pulled the anti-crime in order to avoid having an incident in the city of New York. I mean, he might have done one of my members a favor, for all I know, that they were not the next, national case going across the country. But those cases could be avoided if the chiefs and the commissioners in charge got in front of the news media and told the real story right away, rather than sit in silence and say, well, here's what happened. And the person they were arresting has 9 arrests. And, he punched this one or he did whatever it is that he did and got in front of it. But we're very slow to do that because they're afraid. They're afraid to get up in front of the cameras and be labeled a racist or afraid that they may be wrong or that they get a different political swing that costs them their job. But you shouldn't be afraid of telling the truth. Right. Not have an anti-crime out there. I've said this many times on podcasts, that Bishop Seabrook in Brooklyn, he's got a coalition of churches. Mm-hmm. I was with him the day they did away with anti-crime. And he says, Ed, the only people that are going to suffer by this are my people. And he was referencing, to young African-Americans. And that was over a year ago. He was right.
He was 100% right.
The police commissioner still won't, bring back anti-crime. The mayor is claiming we don't need it. what do we do? What do we do? Adams, if he said that, I got to agree with him.
He did say that. And the other mayoral candidates disagreed with him. And that was at a New York One debate.
No, it's, they have, I worked anti-crime for 5 years. And all of the cops that work in anti-crime, they're really good street cops. They know what's going on out there. They see the guns. They know who the criminals are. This is what they do. They just focus on the real crimes. They don't pick up shoplifters. They're not allowed to do that. They're out there for the guns, the robberies, the rapes, the people stealing cars, doing the burglaries, and they get good at it. Most of them go on to the detective bureau, and they still, you know, make these great arrests going forward. But we took that off the streets, and that was the turning point. I believe that was the turning
point. Was there a selection process for anyone wishing to join the anti-crime unit?
Generally, you had some time on, a little bit of time. It didn't have to be a lot, but most of the people in the anti-crime units were, you know, heavy arrest, you know, collar-oriented cops. They're in the street. Some guys just have a knack for, you know, knowing who's who in the street. They do a good job. And those are the kind of guys that you want in those plainclothes units driving those unmarked cars, and they just fit right into the community. And there's some really good cops in those units. And
yeah,
they go on to become detectives. But I think we did the city of New York a disservice by taking that away. The few things can be done is, you know, bring back anti-crime, change the diaphragm law. We created the perfect storm with qualified immunity. I mean, another issue. And worse yet is we don't have any leaders back in the police. We have no district attorneys. You know, there's something going on with the judges now where they're going to charge the juries by basically saying, you know, the cops are not the end all be all to testimony. So, you know, I saw a statement. I actually wish I had it with me tonight. To think of a statement being presented by judges that is now raising doubt of a police officer's testimony, you just really took away a whole case. If you're saying that the police officer is not credible or may not be credible, that's a problem.
There's a reasonable doubt.
Well, then why are we having a trial if that's the case? Right. Why are we having a trial? But everyone's so afraid. They all want to get their ticket punched to keep, you know, Black Lives Matter from protesting on their lawn. This pendulum's going to swing. And it's going to swing when there are more bodies in the street, more rapes.
Unfortunately,
it's going to take, you know, someone of stature, celebrity status, an elected official, it's going to be a family member, and it's going to become horrific. And that'll be when you see the changes. So far, I've been saying these things all along, and I've been right. Things keep happening.
You've called it. You spoke numerous times, and you've called it. You've really called it.
People do not get it. And, you know,
what do you think that things will change once the mayor, you know, the mayor is almost out of here.
The mayor was out of here 8 years ago. He just,
well, that's true. He was never really here.
Yeah, he never showed up. I think he's still in Boston or in Nicaragua. Really showed up.
I heard something about that. Nicaragua, right?
Yeah, Nicaragua. He's down there when he was in his early 20s with the Sandinistas working. You can't make this up. You know, it happens in New York, it can happen anywhere. A mayor from Boston who doesn't like the police, who ruined the whole city. Go figure.
Right. Doesn't like the Yankees.
No.
Eats pizza with the fork and the knife.
Yeah. Right. Advertises French fries and burgers while people are being murdered in the street. You just can't make this up. You can't make it up. It's probably the most hated guy in the city of New York. I have not found one person that said they like this guy. Not one.
Yeah.
Not one.
How do you think the you're a cop? How do you think the commissioner, who is a police officer, how does he deal with him? I don't get it. You know,
I think he deals with him very simply. He says, "Yes, sir. What would you like me to do next?" That's how I think he deals with him. Because I have not seen one police commissioner under this guy has stood for their morals on any issue yet. I haven't seen it. And the rank and file cops, I believe, would agree with me on this. I have chiefs telling me what's going on here. These are chiefs. These are high-level executives in a police department. One deputy commissioner saying, what is going on here? That no one's in charge. and that we just continue to go down a path that we know is wrong.
Yeah, well, listen, I spoke to a high-level chief not too long ago, and one of the questions was, what's up with Ed? Where is he? We need him, you know?
Tell the chief a resident because he won't let me speak.
Right. So let's start a letter writing campaign to Chief Resnick. I thought Chief Resnick was gone. He's still around.
He's not going to go. He's making over $400,000 a year. He's getting his pensions, getting his deputy commissioner's job. He gets a car. You know, he comes in every day. They're going to do the remake of Captain Queeg there. Strawberries. That's what's going to happen. The guy went from being one of the greatest investigators. You know, every cop would say, if something happened to me, let Resnick catch the case. Now they just can't wait to see him go. They think he's lost his mind.
Yeah. He looks very...
The Derek Jeter syndrome, and I always said Derek Jeter had the best job in the world. Captain of the Yankees, single, won World Series. He got to play baseball. And then one day he wakes up and he says, kind of slow, it's time to go. You know, I got it. And he did it so gracefully. He did it as a gentleman. Yes. He walked out the door, he sailed into the sunset, and he went on with his life. These guys come back and remake themselves, sell their souls to get jobs as deputy commissioners, put me in charge of taxis, put me in charge of emergency management. At what point do you go on and enjoy life? You give the job to someone new with innovative ideas and move on. Don't they have a life at home? Don't they want to see their family or do anything along those lines? I just don't understand it.
I thought that Chief Resnick is no longer the chief of IAB.
He's the deputy commissioner of IAB. They created the position of deputy commissioner to keep
him. Really?
Yeah. And I'm going to probably be brought back in for this one. But
No. Can we record this from the office, from the IAB office?
I just can't go put it out on certain things. They monitor it. A lieutenant up there that monitors. He's the king rat, to be honest.
Really?
The lieutenant, yeah. We're going to post a photo of him soon.
When you say king rat,
No, no. This is the real cheese eater. He probably owns a cheese store. You know, but he's the one that goes, hey, boys, look what I got. That's the guy.
Oh, no.
You know? Yeah, he's the guy. No. He's on all the social media on all the cops, and they're self-initiated. And then they lie. They blame everybody else for it. But that's the story.
In the military, we used to call them cheese eaters.
This is the cheese maker. Yeah.
Listen, we got to have a little bit of everything in to make a different type of world, right?
Unfortunately, it would be nice if we had some real solid, you know, people with fabric in their spine. But
absolutely,
I think the world would be a better place for it. Look, as we go forward with the communities, we're really would like to get more involved with the kids and into the schools. I mean, we did a book bag thing. I often talk about a big brother, big sister mentoring program, when I was a kid, and Pat Russo at the boxing, it's the perfect place to start. We're taking tough kids, street kids, bringing them out into a gym, and many of them have gone on to have great lives. And unfortunately, some have lost their life just by where they live. You know, Pat was telling that story about a week ago, but, that's the goal, is to try to put a gym in each borough. So hopefully as we go forward, the new mayor and some of the new council people will be the borough presidents will be able to work with Pat and establish a place to get a gym, because it's also bringing cops into their communities. It's the cops that are working these gyms with the kids. And it's real. There's a 30-plus year success record of it. Have you been to any of his gyms?
I haven't been to any of his gyms. I know of Pat Russo for a very long time. And also at the Lieutenant Dave Sieve.
Dave Sieve, great guy.
I see how much outreach he does with the kids. And, sometimes when you ask, what do we do? What are the solutions? It's right there with Pat Russo and Dave Sieve. Those programs, those organizations that do that and take the kids off the street, they criticize them because they say, Boxing is a violent sport.
Violent. Yeah, boxing is violent. We don't want our kid in a gym. So let's leave the kid in the street. We'll hook him up with a blood or a crip, and we'll give him a gun. That's not so violent.
That's not so bad. It's madness. It's lunacy. We have to support Pat Russo, his organization, people like Dave Sieve, and everything he's involved in. And we look forward to that meeting with the next Bronxville president, Fernando Cabrera, because he heard about it. I sent him all the information, and he wants to meet with Pat.
My bet is he will do something.
I believe so as well.
Clark, in Brooklyn, we have a new borough president coming in.
Yeah, we're looking at, when I say we, I just really mean me. we are looking very carefully at Robert Cornegy. You know, Bob Cornegy is a straight shooter. Great shooter. He tells it like it is. And, you know, I really look forward to working with him as the next borough president of Brooklyn. And I know that you guys will work very well together as well.
Yeah, he's pretty good, Bob Cornegy. You know, we're going to try and get rid of Jamani Williams, but I don't know if that's going to happen. You know, that Tony Herbert has been pushing really hard. And, you know, we're hoping that he upsets that race. I mean, Jermani's all over the newspaper now, blasting everyone that Tony has to support the police. Well, you know, it's too bad. Jermani, you should be a little bit more concerned about your constituent safety. And, you know, Tony is concerned about the safety of his constituents, but most importantly, all of the people of the city of New York.
Yeah, I know Tony for a long time. We did a lot of, when I was much leaner and much younger, we did a lot of stuff on the street. Yeah, I was getting a younger one at one time. Ed.
Well, we're getting your military photo up here.
Oh, you got him. Put it up.
No, don't worry. I'll say that for another time.
Yes, yes. And put a disclaimer before. But Tony Herbert is a good man. He works very hard for the community. He's been doing this for a long time. And, you know, he decided to put his hat in the ring before. And now he's running again. And look, I would love to see him as the public advocate. He's a good man.
We're supporting Tony. I know all the police groups are supporting Tony, and he's gaining some real traction. So hopefully we can get some new leaders into the city. You know, then our eyes move to the governor's race next year. That should be interesting. I think it is next year. We got the following year, this governor's race. So we'll see how that plays out. But if you had one suggestion for the mayor, for the police commissioner, anyone that was in a position to implement the policy that would help make a change to the city of New York to create more safety, what would it be?
Make Ed Mullins the deputy commissioner of something. Create something.
I would not. Leave Ed Mullins where he is. It's better to keep them in check. At least someone will keep them in check.
That's right. I keep going. This is the last time you're going to have me on the program.
Yeah. He's going to black you out again soon.
Yeah, but, you know, and I say that in sincerity. You have the pulse. You know what's necessary. You're the first individual that came out and said, let's reach out to the churches. Let's do book bag giveaways. You know, grassroots work. That's what's going to have to make it work right now. There has to be a grassroots movement, and someone has to be willing to take that step. You have taken that step, and I hope others will follow.
I think if people do it, they should be sincere about it, though.
Absolutely.
You know, I hear, you know, this one went to this church and spoke to this group and spoke to that group, but what's the outcome? What's the outcome?
What's the follow-up?
Right. What's taking place? Like, when we do things, yeah, we have a follow-up to it. And we go back. We'll always go back. But I never see the outcome to these programs. That, you know, Tish James issued a report about last summer, and the NYPD needed to make changes. And Clown Monahan says, yeah, we're working on it. We're going to do it. He left. He's gone. The mayor said, we're going to do it. He'll be gone. So what changes are you making? You know, I just would like to see them stop lying to the people.
And at least complete. If you have something in place, complete it. To leave it up in the air really makes no sense. Why start it, you know? I believe that the next mayor has to set a pace of what he's going to do and when he's going to be when it's going to be completed by. Also bring in advisors that are for real, people that this administration has kept on the outs. I've been kept on the outs many times because of my views and my positions. But I'm not looking to be popular. I'm not looking to sugarcoat anything. I don't work in a sugarcane factory. I'm a straight shooter, and it's always better to be correct and to be politically correct. That's the way I've always believed, and people will respect you at the end if that's the course of action you take.
Very few leaders want to be told the truth, and I think good leaders, great leaders, can accept the truth, but not everyone wants to hear the truth because now they have to deal with it. They think it just goes away. It just doesn't go away. I think for the next mayor of New York City, they'll have a lot going on in front of them. There's a lot of issues on the table right now, but it can only go up. See, they're going to look good because the city is in shambles right now. So when something is so badly broken, you can only fix it. If they make it any worse, then we certainly have a mayor that would be worse than de Blasio if that was the case.
Right.
So they have a lot of room here to make some changes to move forward. And I think that's going to be the difference.
Would you be willing to sit at that table to assist?
I'm willing to sit at any table with anyone that's going to bring solutions. I mean, even the Black Lives Matter groups, you bring up the, people that want to make changes to do things, but don't do it just for the sake of saying, we have this meeting and you're going to show, cameras and all this stuff. No, if you want to have a meeting, bring your balls to the table. Let's sit down, have a real conversation if you're about that. But most people I find are about the money, what they can get from it, what headline they can get from it. That they live in their 15 minutes of fame. But
cosmetics.
Look, I talk to homeless people. And there's the old saying, even the dull and ignorant have their story too, right? So, you learn from everyone, but to not sit at a table, for any particular reason would be foolish. You can want to have a seat at the table to be part of a solution. We're just about out of time. Anything you want to leave a message to your members of your community?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you once again for this opportunity. This is a great service. People are learning. People are listening. Please continue to listen. And what I would like to say for our elected officials and our soon-to-be borough presidents, include the labor unions, include the law enforcement unions in the conversation. It's necessary. They have the pulse. And include the activists, include our clergy in the conversation. We all must work together. I think that if we work together at the end of the day, we'll have a great conclusion. God bless our city and God bless our police officers and all first responders as well.
Thank you, Clark. And thank everyone for watching. I'm Ed Mullins. To the point, we'll see you again soon. Thank you. Have a good night.